The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation, and we're lucky to have them as a sponsor of the Inside Transportation Podcast. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Today on the Inside Transportation Podcast, we have the Chief Commercial Officer of Li-Cycle Corp, Kunal Falfer. Kunal has been involved with Li-Cycle since 2017, bringing extensive international experience in the lithium-ion battery and renewable energy sectors to Li-Cycle, with experience primarily in business development and corporate strategy. So thank you so much for joining us today, Kunal. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little about your background and introduce yourself a little bit more to our audience?
Great. Yeah, no problem. So myself, you know, I'm an electrical engineer by background. So things like EVs and how cars work have fascinated me for a long time. I also finished my business school about 10 years ago. And that's really when I hit this career change going into clean tech and renewable energy. So from 2010 to 2015, I spent about 5 years living and working in Germany, predominantly in the renewable energy space, but that's, you know, really the infancy of energy storage and my first learnings around battery storage and grid storage. 2015, I decided to come back home to Canada and look at other opportunities. So I entered back into the energy storage space. And while I was there, actually, the founders of Li-Cycle, Tim and Ajay, approached me asking, you know, what's happening with batteries today, end of life for the batteries that you do put on the market, and is this business a good idea? I said, yeah, of course. So in 2017, I started to advise Li-Cycle while still having a day job. And over time, as I evolved in my day-to-day career and moved back into solar, you know, Li-Cycle started to prove out its technology and there was an opportunity to really drive the commercial side of this business. So I've been in this role as Chief Commercial Officer for about 2 years, and I manage basically sales and marketing for the company. So we have one group that looks at getting batteries in from various sources for us to recycle. There's a group that then markets the material we recover from the batteries, and then a real marketing and communications team.
Right. So why don't you elaborate a little bit to our audience about what Li-Cycle does exactly? Because you guys are involved in electric vehicle battery recycling. But why don't you tell us a little bit more about the company, how it's structured, and what you guys ultimately do with these batteries?
For sure. So Li-Cycle, in a nutshell, is a lithium-ion battery resource recovery company. You know, our mission is to recover critical materials, plus the other materials in the battery, and bring them back into the battery supply chain, hence closing the loop and creating that circular economy around lithium-ion batteries. So how the company started, late 2016, Ajay and Tim, who I referred to, are the two co-founders. They worked in an engineering company where they were in the lithium practice. So they were supporting lithium producers in designing, executing, and building out their production plants. And that's when they started to see this opportunity to look at what to do with all these batteries, or the tsunami of batteries that's forecast with the growth in electric vehicles. Of course, we see lithium-ion batteries in all sorts of applications, but what's really driving the lithium-ion battery demand is EVs. but just from a volume perspective. So they put their heads together. One's a mechanical engineer and one's a chemical engineer. And they said, hey, we can do this better than what's existing in the market in a more sustainable way, with a better recovery rate. To date, actually, everyone focused on recovering the nickel and cobalt, but because of their expertise in the lithium space, they said we should be able to get the lithium back from these batteries. So late 2016 started with an idea, you know, the very technical process to get through various stages of R&D to get to a commercial scale. But fast forward to today, we're a commercial lithium ion battery recycler in North America, with global ambitions. And what do we actually do and what is the technology? I can explain briefly.
Yeah.
It's really a two-phase process. So one is a mechanical process where you break down the batteries, render them inert. You know, a couple of the key challenges is that lithium ion batteries are, of course, susceptible to fire, et cetera.
Right.
As well,
safety concerns with lithium ion batteries.
Exactly. But the second piece is also when we look at spent lithium ion batteries, one of the major costs is logistics and how do you move these heavy batteries across various networks to a point where you can safely and sustainably dispose of these and recover the materials. Because for it to go into a landfill, that's not, A, it's not environmentally friendly, but B, there's an inherent risk there that causes potential fire in a landfill and you're wasting that resource. So that front end piece is what we call our spoke, and that we basically shred the batteries safely, and you get some components like copper and aluminum out, you get a plastic stream out, and what's most important is you get what the industry calls black mass, which is really the inside of the battery, the anode and cathode material, mixed into one product, which contains then nickel, cobalt, manganese, lithium, graphite, amongst a couple of other items. So that's what
really... How is that black mass used, or how is that reused? Because I've heard of this black mass material before, and I've always been curious, like, what do you end up doing with this black mass? And for, you know, people who want to see a little bit more about black mass, I'll put like a picture in the show notes. But yeah, tell me more about this black mass and how it's used.
Exactly. So that first technology, as I mentioned, the spoke produces black mass. And our second technology is what we call our hub, which is a hydrometallurgical process. I mean, put it in simpler terms, it's a refinery. You could take that black mass and refine out all the materials. So through our process, we can refine the nickel, the cobalt, lithium at a battery grade. So a very pure product that can actually go back into the battery supply chain. And then in parallel, we recover whatever copper and aluminum was left in there, but also the graphite. But those products would be reusable, but not in a battery. They've experienced some changes through use in a battery where you can't, say, take that graphite, put it back in a battery. But there's other applications, hundreds of applications to use graphite for. So before this technology, really that black mass and it, you know, heavily across the globe, it's still sold to nickel and cobalt refiners targeting just that, the nickel and the cobalt from it. But their processes are designed around traditional nickel cobalt refining from primary resources, where what problem we've solved is we've built up a tailor-made technology that is designed around refining black mass. And that's how also we're able to produce the battery grade lithium. And that said, the lithium is battery grade, but there's also other technical applications like high-end glass and ceramics that use lithium carbonate in their production process.
That's crazy. So do you guys actually produce batteries with all of these recycled materials, or is it more of like a sales process? Like you have all this material and then you sell it back to maybe like LG Chem or Samsung, who's making like a mass quantity of electric vehicle batteries.
So the idea is to sell back into their supply chain. So one step before the sell, you have a precursor that goes into the cathode material. So that's really where this material would get inserted. But it's not only those companies that, you know, are looking for this material. It's going to be also driven, as you said, by the cell manufacturers or by the automakers, right? Right. You've seen public announcements, like I would say BMW has probably done this the most from just reading the news, but they've signed direct, you know, cobalt contracts with mines, et cetera. And that's a trend that's, you know, it's increasingly going to happen, we see.
And we're going to continue our conversation with Kunal right after the break. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Would you say that your process is more ethically sourced, right? Because I think the big conversation when it comes to getting materials for electric vehicle batteries is kind of the ethical component of it. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're boxing in our process, we're taking spent batteries, which a lot of people consider a waste, and we're turning that into a resource. And it's all done, you know, in proper labor conditions, et cetera. You know, when they talk about ethical sourcing, it's really geared around talking about cobalt and a lot of the cobalt coming from the DRC. So companies want to move away from that. How, I mean, the cobalt we're recovering, you know, from batteries that have already been produced, you know, its origin may have been DRC, but what we're doing is offsetting the need for more cobalt from the DRC or unethical sources by creating this recycled stream of cobalt.
Yeah.
And that's really the product that's in focus when you talk about ethical sourcing.
Right, right. Have you seen any automakers or cell manufacturers be apprehensive to using like these recycled materials? And is there any drawbacks in using, you know, like recycled cobalt, recycled lithium? I mean, what are some of the differences between using like a recycled material and something that's coming out of a mine?
Yeah, so there's really no difference since we're breaking down the material back to the fundamental building blocks and creating a equivalent product like a lithium carbonate to the specification that these companies require. So if you look at the two materials side by side in the specification, they're equivalent. I think what's been missing in this sector is that there hasn't been a scale of recyclable material. If I walk into one of the companies you mentioned and say, hey, I can produce 5 tons a year of cobalt sulfate, they'll say, thank you very much, but we use thousands. That's not really interesting to us. That's not going to make a dent. So really what the industry needs is scale of being able to produce thousands of tons of these materials to bring back into the supply chain. And that's exactly what we're doing now. We're going to be building a large scale hub or that refinery process in North America that can achieve that scale to produce large quantities of recycled material.
So I have a question for you. How do you obtain all of these batteries, right? And what's the strategy you kind of have for obtaining more of these batteries in the future? Because I'm sure as we kind of get out of these cycles with some of these original electric vehicles like the Nissan Leaf or some of the older Tesla Model S's. I mean, I'm sure those are going to be coming into junkyards. What's your process as far as obtaining batteries? Because I'm sure right now it must be a little bit challenging to get some lithium ion batteries, right?
Yeah, but I mean, lithium ion batteries touch everyone's life more than I think people realize. I'll give you an anecdote. Once I said at a conference, you know, I counted in my apartment that I have 8 lithium ion batteries between my vacuum and laptop and whatever. And a gentleman got up and he said, I have a family of 4 and we have 120 lithium ion batteries. I mean, I would challenge your listeners to think about how could they go about in a day without using a lithium ion battery. And it'd be very tough for most people.
Right. Even like a razor or a shaver uses one, right?
Yeah. And all sorts of things are converting to lithium. Power tools, your lawnmower, your Roomba, your car, obviously. And I think you're right. I mean, the electric vehicles, you know, we need more of them on the road. They have to reach a certain end of life to get the batteries. We do get some batteries that have maybe reached an early end of life or gotten an accident, but their lithium ion batteries are in so many applications that there's other verticals where we're accessing batteries. So just to take you through some of them, one to start with is from the manufacturing process. The manufacturing process, starting at the very fundamental of putting the cathode together or the cell together or the battery pack together, they all produce a certain level of scrap that can't make it into a vehicle or a product. So best thing to do with that is recycle it, get the resources back and try and bring that back into the production. Second is, I mean, e-waste has been an issue around for many years. And, you know, our phones and laptops, everyone, particularly in the Western world, 2-3 years, your phone contract comes up and you say, okay, let me get a new phone. The challenge there is that when people do get the new phone is that, let me keep my old phone in case this new one doesn't work. There are initiatives about take back programs from the manufacturers or the telecoms that are trying to increase that collection. So there's that portable electronic stream in electronic waste, but same with the electronic waste companies. There's the whole household. I've already mentioned vacuums and power tools, et cetera. There's a lot of lithium ion batteries that are used up in that vertical. But obviously each battery is much smaller from a weight perspective and material perspective versus an EV, right? And then I would say that there's kind of this, let me talk about energy storage, right? So energy storage, obviously grid scale storage, large battery banks here in North America, you know, first projects around 2014, 15 were being deployed in California and the like. So you're starting to see some of those come offline, being repowered. Mm-hmm. And then those batteries need to move somewhere. And then there's a whole host of various motive applications. I mean, all the scooters with those 3-4 companies, Lyft, Jump, Uber, Lime. I don't want to leave anyone out. Those are all lithium ion powered. And they're not, you know, if you walk around a street in a major city late at night, you know, the scooters aren't treated well, so they have a very short life often.
Yes, or they get thrown into the bay.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, one of the scooter providers said that to me, that a lot of them end up in cities with water in the water. So there's that kind of what they call micro-mobility, but when we think about, let's call it mass transit or mass commercial mobility, everything is becoming electrified. Your city buses, your, you know, local trucks, your long distance trucks, even those that use fuel cell, the fuel cell trucks or buses will have a large lithium ion battery in them. And then you have kind of the far out applications. I've seen jet skis. You're talking about, you know, planes with lithium ion batteries. Of course, that's kind of a longer term.
Right.
So it's good to think about passenger EVs. That's going to drive it, but then there's tons of other places to acquire batteries from.
We'll be back with more from Kunal right after the break.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick & West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
So as I'm sure you're aware of, Tesla is working on a new revolutionary million-mile battery, right? And the idea here is that once the vehicle has, you know, exited its life cycle, you know, consumers would be able to reuse that battery for energy storage, for solar. So I guess my question is, do you think that the reuse of an EV battery for energy storage is a competitor to your business, right? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think if we talk about current batteries, you know, there is a certain application for reuse. Again, if you're trying to create a reuse product, you need a high volume of like batteries, because the software built into the battery and the size format, if you're getting, you know, 10 different flavors of batteries, it's hard to integrate that into a consistent product on your output. So it is a challenge. And I've heard also from the reuse sector, then if you don't have that consistent product, how do you actually get it certified, like UL certified, so that it's safe and allowed to, say, connect to the grid? There have been a number of, you know, pilot projects that have gone on. There are also, you know, applications like off-grid, et cetera, where people can have reuse batteries. But for
I think Nissan was one of the companies that has been working on that.
But they also have the probably the largest pool of batteries coming off the road since their vehicle's been on the road a while. Yeah. But if you're trying to do this as a third party and acquire batteries, it is a little bit more difficult at the large scale. But there's a couple things working against that. What are companies now worried about going forward is, if you look at most of the projections, you know, critical material supply is going to become an issue with cobalt, nickel, and lithium. So by partnering with resource recovery companies, if you, that company continues to own the battery and own the materials in the battery, they can work with companies like ours to get the materials back. The other thing is, I mean, the economics of it are tricky at the moment, right? New batteries have come down significantly in cost. And this is outside of the million mile battery. If it's done in a car after 8 or 10 years, and it's at 80% of its original capacity, after 80%, the battery is going to fade significantly. If you're talking about a million mile battery, then you have a different case. If that is in a car for 10 years, and then there's still like equivalent, say, 10 years of life left, then it may only be at 90% of its original capacity. So then you don't have that that fade of its capacity. And then maybe you can even deploy that in large-scale grid storage. But again, you need a number of like batteries to piece together to build a system.
Right. As I'm sure you're aware, we're all kind of in this pandemic right now. We're all either staying at home. Some of our business operations have been affected. So how has the pandemic kind of affected Li-Cycle and what you guys are doing?
Definitely, we would say that, you know, the partners we work with that consolidate consumer electronics, batteries, et cetera, there's a lot of their collection programs are in offices, retail shops, et cetera. So we haven't seen it yet, but there's a lag effect that there's definitely fewer people are going to be dropping off batteries in stores. But at the same time, even during the pandemic, you're seeing a lot of EV announcements. And, you know, when the oil crashed at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, there was two schools of thought: oil's cheap again, are people going to pursue EVs? But we've seen from most of the major manufacturers, they're staying the course, and they're continuing to execute on their EV plans.
Yeah, and investors love EV stocks right now too.
Yeah, and then that's in the, I guess, most recent 6 weeks. You know, there's been some of these SPACs in the US. I think it was Fisker. You see some other newly listed or upcoming listings. Obviously, Nikola also listed. So there's been a lot of momentum behind electric vehicles. And then, I mean, what's the next momentum to build all these EVs? You need battery materials. So Li-Cycle, right, as a provider of sustainable battery materials, is right behind those companies in terms of...
And that gets you excited, right? As someone who's in that space, I'm assuming.
Exactly. I mean, it was great to see that the momentum is still behind the EVs. You know, a firm believer that this is the future. Otherwise, I guess I wouldn't be in this business if I didn't believe in the electrified future. But there's a lot of consumer choice coming. So we're just at the, I think, tipping point. If you see the announcements, so, you know, the number of vehicles in 2021, 2022, you have the, let's call it the great electric pickup truck race with many pickup trucks coming out. And then also on the commercial vehicle side, continue to see more deployment. I think more and more people will realize this is a very viable option. And if you've ever driven an EV, it's really a great experience. And I think we just have to get people over the sort of range anxiety mindset. If you have 400 miles range or 600 kilometer range, you know, you never drive that much in your regular car. So I'm not sure why there's a sort of mental shift that needs to happen amongst consumers that, you know, if you're charging at home, you have enough range to use the car.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, but at the same time, it's like we have an auto market where people are buying giant pickup trucks and, you know, they're just going to the grocery store. They're not using the full capacity. It's so interesting, like the consumer mindset with EVs, because I've actually argued with my co-hosts on this podcast about that before. I still personally think that there's some range anxiety with consumers, especially those who have seen what Tesla's been doing. I know Cadillac just came out with their Lyriq SUV, which is supposed to be their competitor to the, you know, Model Y, Model X. It's like an SUV kind of vehicle. And the number one thing I heard about people was the range wasn't long enough. And it's like a over 300 mile range. So it's kind of interesting because it's like, really, are you really going to drive 300 miles on a single range? Probably not. Yeah. But I think people want that peace of mind, I guess.
It's just because I think people, to be honest, some of them maybe haven't looked out how many chargers there are out there. I live in the Toronto area. There's a lot of chargers, and not to favor one company, but of course, you know, I've been thinking, what should I get? And, when you look at the supercharger network, where you have so much flexibility, it's almost like having gas stations every, you know, 30, 40 miles with the Tesla supercharger. It does make you less concerned because, you know, you're always going to be within a certain range of a supercharger, even on major highway networks. So as soon as, you know, the other initiatives, you have Electrify America, and there's going to continue to be more supercharger networks and partnerships around that and standardization, then it's just going to be like going to the gas station, right? I agree. It takes a little bit longer, but if you're doing a long road trip, you're probably getting gas, getting a coffee, maybe getting a snack or using the bathroom. So you're stopping for 10, 15 minutes anyway.
Absolutely. And I know the V3 supercharger can charge like 300 miles in like 10 or 15 minutes, which isn't bad at all. I mean, I know for sure, like whenever I've gotten gasoline at Costco, it might take you like 10, 15 minutes to get through that line. So I'm very bullish on it. I think people are going to definitely mass adopt EVs. But I guess just to wrap things up a little bit here, as far as Li-Cycle goes, what do you guys envision in the future? Where do you guys kind of plan to expand? And where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, for sure. In terms of expansion, of course, North America is our home market. We're building out the spoke network and the hub to produce battery materials here. There's more battery manufacturing coming here that would potentially consume those materials. But, you know, 10 years out also, you look at different reports, 70%, 65% of the battery manufacturing supply chain is still going to be in Asia and predominantly in China. So it's important for us, if we want to scale this business with this novel technology, to be in Asia. And then in between that, you see more battery production coming online in Europe. So there's a big opportunity there. We're looking at both Europe and Asia, but obviously as a smaller company trying to scale, we're looking at working with partners in those markets to help us scale faster. Cause you know, there will be other companies coming up with technologies trying to develop similar things. So now is a critical time to expand our network, before that real big, tsunami of batteries, you know, 2024, 2025, when you have larger volumes of EVs coming off the road from the early generations, to be prepared for that.
Right. Yeah. And, people can learn more about Li-Cycle. Is it li-cycle.com? Is that the website?
Yeah, exactly. It's li-cycle.com, or we have Twitter and LinkedIn. You can follow us on to keep up to date, on our activities.
So yes, that's Kunal Falfer, the Chief Commercial Officer for Li-Cycle Corp. And that's going to be a wrap for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.